Oh God. Oh my God.
It was all a dream. He was in the shower the whole time.
No.
No. Those are the worst.
Fucking Dynasty.
Just thinking about it.
Yeah, for
real. Was that Dynasty?
Probably. I can't remember.
My pop culture references are going to be all fucked up tonight.
Well, good thing you don't have to have too many pop culture references. You just need four.
I have one of them right here.
That's true.
Ooh. I don't like coconut, so that doesn't do anything for me.
You know, I don't like coconut either, but in the spirit of this, I'm definitely going to house one of those snowballs.
Yeah, there is absolutely nothing about a snowball that I find attractive, aside from the pinkness of it, yeah, and the chocolate cake. But I'm not a huge fan of the Hostess frosting. Like,
same.
So, yeah, you know, we're just going to get through it. I'll take one to the mouth, and that's fine.
This is now a snack cake podcast.
Yeah,
exactly. Hey, when was the last time we made that joke?
Ooh, changing what the podcast is?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I don't know.
Like we've been kind of on it these last like few rounds and
doing our work.
Boo.
Fucking cowards.
I love how it's taken us 3 years to get good at this and we're literally two episodes from the end.
Yeah.
Well, you know. It's still arguable about whether we're good at this or not, too.
Fair enough.
But we are still here and less distracted.
I mean,
yeah, and for those listeners out there, you are going to hear these in strange order, I suppose, because this is going to come out. And then the next episode, I think, is going to be Gunslingers, if we can track that shit down. And then it's going to be the Nick Cage Universe D&D game, part one and two. And then the Surfer and then the finale. So that'll be interesting.
Oh, you're splitting the game up into two episodes.
It was quite long.
Yeah.
Plus, there's like a good in-between point that I think we can, you know, last time on Cage Match.
I'm pretty sure you like inserted one of those while we were playing and I was like thrown back for a second. I was like, oh, that's probably his natural breaking point.
Like emotionally?
Yes.
I mean,
I will say that the first time I heard Daryl do the Peter Lowe voice, I lost my shit.
Yeah, that was pretty incredible. Yeah. Man, I was just watching some YouTube stuff today, and this is going to tie back in a second. And I was watching a scene, a Norman Reedus scene from the new Bike Riders film. Tom Hardy motorcycles and Australia shit. And Norman Reedus has the most Bobby Peru teeth ever in that thing. They're tiny and they're moldy and it's gross.
Ew.
Yeah. It was very hard to watch that scene, but it was nice. Emotionally. Like, loinally.
Did I tell you guys when I was acting in college, I played a, like, down south racist in a play called The Foreigner? And
boy, as a Chiefs fan, that probably wasn't too hard.
Really big stretch, I know.
And I feel like I knew this about you.
Yeah, the director had me use that stuff that makes your teeth look absolutely fucking disgusting. You just paint it on. And I wish I had a picture of it. I don't think I have a picture of it anymore, but it was repulsive.
Yeah, it's like grease makeup for your teeth.
Yeah, really, really gnarly. They look so fucking bad.
I don't like it. I never had to do anything like that.
Yeah, well, play more racist.
I'll try.
Acting.
Yeah, I hate being typecast, though.
Yeah, right. I played a villain, I think, 4 out of the 5 plays that I was in, which is kind of amazing.
I was a villain, I think, only once. I was Henri Labisse in Victor Victoria.
Oh, nice.
The French club owner.
Yeah, cool. Honestly, playing a bad guy is pretty amazing.
It's pretty great.
Like, there's something so fun.
The bad guys have the most fun. There's like the bad guys are always the character who has a plan, who has a goal, who like wants to fucking do something. And the hero just shows up and fucks that shit up.
Yeah.
Catches the breeze.
What an ass.
Yeah.
Speaking of fucking shit up, welcome back to Cage Match, calling a roundabout way of meeting Nicolas Cage. My name is Sean, here with my co-host,
Nick.
Thank you for fucking that up.
I'm Nick.
and our producer,
Peter. Hello.
Thank you for not fucking that up, Peter.
Yeah, you're welcome. And,
hey, I got my name right.
You did.
Yeah.
No jicks here.
Nope. I checked.
And this is, did I say this is Cage Match, colon, roundabout way meeting Nicolas Cage?
You did.
I
way
did.
To fuck
okay.
that up.
So Sean yeah. is working off of very minimal sleep for you, dear listener.
Yeah, I got 20-minute naps today after like 2.5 hours of sleep last night.
You should be able to fucking 2:30
a.m.
Yeah.
Woo! I had a shot of espresso before hitting the mic. So I'm going to crash hard at some point.
Did you boof it?
Yeah. Mm. Butt coffee.
No.
Have you tried?
Brown and brown.
Amphetamines?
For the sake of my job, no.
Reasonable. Reasonable.
On this podcast, we have watched 64 Nicolas Cage films, bracket style, and have gone round after round to now the final foreskin, the top four movies. We're going to discuss them, and we're going to decide what the final two are today on Cage Match.
Colin, a roundabout way of meeting Nicolas Cage.
With your hosts, Sean and Nick, and me, Peter.
Nice.
I don't like this. Now you're just fucking with me. I'm sleep deprived.
This is perfect.
I don't know where I am.
We can do whatever we want.
It is the ideal time to start doing that.
Well, so I think it makes the most sense to just kind of kick it off from the top of the bracket where we started. And it's going to be action versus comedy.
Sure.
So it's a Con Air up against Raising Arizona, which, you know, both of them have action and both of them have comedy. So of the two head-to-heads that we're dealing with today, this is the one that makes more sense.
Yes.
Nick, you suggested some prompts, if you will. Do we want to like...
Yeah, so there's a couple things through? That we're looking at in, you know, talking about these four rather different films, because you can't like compare an action film to a comedy necessarily and say which one's better because they're doing different things. So we're looking at some of our...
One
like,
is definitely better, though.
Well,
well, let's debate.
Yeah. So we're looking at some of the core items that we set out to figure out what was the really the meat of this podcast and like finding the cagiest, like best kind of Nicolas Cage film. So we're looking at our caginess. You know, if you've gotten this far and you haven't figured out what that is, it's you're more.
Yeah, this is your first episode of Cage Match. You chose poorly.
It doesn't get better.
I will say in terms of caginess, that much like the fucking whims, we decide what is good does change drastically movie
absolutely.
To movie.
Right. Generally, caginess we would describe as his eccentricities.
Yeah, the bug eyes, the freak outs, the you know,
the big motions, the
emotions,
the caginess of it all. Within the film, you know, we're going to look at the performances, how well that conveys what it needs to in the film. You know, just look, we're not like film critics. We're going to do the best we can, but we're not. This isn't science. The originality of the film and of the performance, we'll look at that, as well as a general effectiveness of the film in reaching its goal in the film to audience, you know,
pipeline.
Touchiness. Like
touchiness?
Yeah.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, does the film...
And you say we're not professional
things,
film
right?
critics.
Yeah, I know, we're professionals. Yeah, so those four categories, we're just going to kind of talk them out and use that as a diving board.
Yeah, I mean, so
a jumping off point.
So I think
a jumping off board that you would into a pool.
Ooh, right. A jumpy board.
A jumping off board.
It's the next big thing. It'll catch on. So Con Air.
Yeah, what's this movie about?
Convicts in the air.
Neat. It's got show tunes. It's amazing. No, it doesn't. It is amazing.
That
though.
would
it does
be,
have that Leonard Skinner song.
You know,
it
does.
Where could I be? That's not Leonard Skinner.
No, it is not.
Although, fucking,
how do I live there we go. Without you?
This would make such an amazing Broadway musical in the vein of like Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark or like the King Kong musical. Holy like taking fuck. Like,
yes, it would.
A fucking, yeah.
I just wouldn't want it to get canceled. That's the problem with those ones.
Yeah, that's true. Those are all the ones that failed really badly.
We have to see it immediately. I want Cyrus the Virus's big number.
Yeah. Do you remember when there was the Evil Dead musical?
Sheevil Dead?
No, just Evil Dead.
Oh, there was Evil Dead the musical. Yeah. I never saw it.
No, no one did. It like performed in Toronto and closed.
That's really disappointing because I bet it was good.
I bet it was great.
Yeah. Man, got to get to more theater.
So Con Air, Nicolas Cage plays Cameron Poe, who is arrested and sentenced to 7 years in prison after killing a man in self-defense.
Still such bullshit. Like, I hate that part of it. I mean, I get it. He has to go to prison. That's the wrong point. But that's so dumb.
His hands are deadly weapons.
You should have known better.
He's held to a high standard.
It's a good thing that guy took the knife off the ground when he ran away.
Yeah.
Because then there was no way to prove that Nicolas Cage.
Otherwise, this would have been a very short movie and very different.
Yeah.
It does bother me, though, that at the end he just gets to like go off with his wife. I'm like, there's paperwork to sign. Like, he's going back to prison because like he just like left.
If I've learned anything from watching Jack Reacher, is it's that he can just fuck shit up and leave and it's OK because he, you know, did it in the name of good.
Right. Mm.
And also because the powers that be probably won't report his involvement.
Also, just being a giant motherfucker who is super imposing.
Yeah. Yeah. Alan Ritchson's a huge dude.
I mean, Nick Cage is pretty big in this. Like, this he's pretty big in this. This is Swole Cage. We're getting up there.
Yeah.
Have we ever talked about how tall Nicolas Cage is?
No.
No.
Oh, my God. Who's going to Google that first?
I'm going to guess that he is 6'1".
Oh, that's it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So he's 5'11".
Yeah, exactly. No, I think he's probably going to come in at like 6 foot true, maybe like 6 foot higher. True. Yeah.
Yeah.
6 foot even according to the Googles.
Okay. So still 5'11", but yeah.
Okay. So, all right. I found a flaw with Face Off. John Travolta is 2 inches taller.
John Travolta is that tall?
With his lifts, apparently.
Apparently. Jesus Christ. And he kind of has a pompadour some of the time, too. Yeah, that gives you extra height.
I've told you guys the story about how I saved my ex-girlfriend from Scientologists.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Fuck. That's an interesting cult, for sure. Cults are interesting, just in general.
This is now a cult podcast.
Yeah. What's your favorite cult?
What's my favorite cult?
Yeah.
Probably
the look at you.
Oh no, Sean, we're losing you. We're losing you.
It's almost as if this was a comedy podcast at one point.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm thinking about cults.
I like that Hale-Bopp Comet cult.
Yeah.
Also, that was a 1997 thing.
Yeah.
A lot of shit happened in 97.
I think I got to go true to my roots and go with the Oregon cult. Yeah.
That makes sense.
God, what were they called again? But they did some wild.
Rajneesh movement?
Yeah, the Rajneeshis.
Yeah.
Rajneeshi. That's such a fun word to say wrong.
Yeah.
Rajneeshi. trying to poison the water in Portland with salmonella.
Oh, that was pretty good. That part.
Yeah. And all the firearms.
What about you, Manson? You a Manson guy?
No, I'm not a Manson guy. Fucking Jim Jones is fucking Jonestown's wacky. Fucking they killed an orangutan in that one.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah, the family had a pet orangutan. Mm. Like if you listen to
was that one of those where like he used to be a door-to-door ape salesman or whatever?
Door-to-door monkey salesman, yeah.
Totally a career.
Yeah, it was.
Fucking dude, the fucking 70s was a wild time. Was it the 70s? I don't remember.
All probably the people earlier. Who didn't live in the 70s.
I know, right?
Door to door monkey salesman was a job at one point in this nation's history. We live in the worst possible time.
You can claim anything as a job, I suppose.
I mean,
if somebody transacts money for a thing you do, like, there you go.
If we went out and got monkeys today, we could still be door to door monkey salesmen. We would just be very
unsuccessful,
urgent monkey salesmen because we don't want to get caught with these monkeys.
Or killed by them.
Well, we keep them in the trunk, obviously.
Oh, good. Trunk monkeys.
God, safe.
Nice. Come
on. These monkeys are priced to move.
Con Air. This movie has, like, almost no caginess to it. It's a pretty straight action performance.
He is kind of a blank canvas upon which bad things happen, and he reacts with violence.
Yeah, I mean, he gets to be a badass in response.
And sarcasm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeehaw.
Oh, yeah. But that's like, I just rewatched this two nights ago, and I'm just like, he has so little to say in this film. And it's not bad. Like, he serves the role of, like, fucking brick shithouse. What to do the violence that saves the day. But there is a definite lack of a personality in Cameron Poe.
What is the sound that we are hearing?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's my voice.
Well, what is this horrible noise?
Yeah.
I think it's just the heat, but it sounds weird and rattly.
Fridge.
Yeah, maybe the fridge. Also, don't try and open that fridge because the handle will just fall off.
Oh, sick. I'm going to do it.
Yeah. Sorry, John.
And then I'm going to hide the handle in the fridge.
There you go. Nice.
Ooh. But how is he going to open the door to get the handle out?
Aha.
I'll trick him. I'll put the handle on the wrong side. Oh, he'll pull the fridge over.
We should just switch his door.
No, you got a turtle backpack. You got to turn it inside out.
Yeah.
Yes. That is still one of the best pranks. Was that Seth who told us that?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that was so fucking good. It's like the most harmless prank that is incredible.
Nick said he was going to buy me a backpack just so he could do it to me.
Yeah. I could do it to a purse, though.
You could definitely turtle a purse.
Don't turtle my purse.
Yeah, so there isn't a whole lot for the caginess, but performance, you know, like kind of like I said, it's pretty standard action performance. I don't think it goes out of its way to be good. His accent's not good.
No.
So points lost on that one. But it's also like an iconic performance. Like, put the bunny in the box.
Well, and I mean, it's one of those things. It's like, he is true to the character.
Yeah. No,
you know, he definitely is playing Cameron Poe, and there's no like debate about it. But yeah, it's not like he's asked to do
much.
No
major acting, you know.
No, there's no like deep dives in feelings or
no. I do love the accent. I do love the subtlety of just, he doesn't have a lot of lines, but the ones he does have are like, they're fun. Like when Garland is giving his reasoning why one dude's like how laughter like actually hurts this guy, Billy Bedlam. And all he does is goes, just says hi. He's like, hi, Garland.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty good. And like, it would be great, except like the fucking, I'm going to prove to you there is a God, is the dumbest line, and I hate it.
It is a dumb line.
That's easily the worst line in the entire fucking movie. There's no reason for it. It's like, he's not shown as being religious or spiritual, even
beyond just being from Alabama.
Right.
Right. But outside of that, it's like, yeah, no, I mean, he never like does any kind of prayer or anything like that when he's in prison. Like, well, I don't know. No,
I still maintain he's not that smart considering he thought, you know, his fucking 4-year-old daughters was writing those letters.
I mean, somebody could have been doing dictation.
That's how each one of those letters ended. Dictated.
Yeah.
Dictated, not read.
Yep.
It would make the most sense.
But yeah, no, I I don't think Cameron is a particularly smart man. He never needed to be. He's just a, you know, retired Army Ranger. And I don't recall them having an IQ test as an entrance in the ASVAB. So
what the fuck was that?
The ASVAB? You never took the ASVAB?
No, I just heard a fucking terrifying noise on my end.
Oh. Oh, well, we can't take any more breaks. You have to just live with the horror in your home.
We'll tell you if something comes up behind you, though.
Yeah. I mean, I can see if anything's coming up behind me.
Well, that's true.
That's vampire, and it's not seen on camera.
Maybe. Although, I think vampires would show up on digital cameras. Because I think they didn't show up in earlier ones because of the mirror in an SLR camera.
Right. Ooh. So if you had a mirrorless cam.
Yeah. So I think that would be the difference here. And I was thinking about it. I think, not to start talking about vampires or anything, but
it's a vampire podcast now.
The reasons that they don't show up in mirrors is because mirrors used to be lined with silver.
Right.
Which was their bad feels.
It all makes sense.
Yeah.
Way to get to the bottom of vampires.
Yeah, I do a lot of thinking about vampires when I'm just sitting at home. It's so hot.
All right, moving on.
Yeah. So, you know, overall, I think this movie does a great job of being an action film.
Yeah. Like if you look at any aspect of this movie too long, it falls apart. But if you're just there for the ride, fucking great. Yeah,
which is exactly where it needs to be. But there's no deep themes. You're not going to walk away from it thinking about anything other than how cool it is.
I still maintain this movie's weakest point was the fact that the script was not finished and was kind of being written on the days, just because they have such great archetypes for characters and great people playing them. And most of them have nothing really to do other than just be one-dimensional bad guys, where you have a Garland Green who's there for mild comic relief but is set up to be so much more. Cyrus the Virus, really fun villain, could have done a little more with.
It definitely suffers from having too much good stuff. What is that, AMPM?
yeah,
too much good stuff.
Or it has a lot of good stuff, just none of it's focused.
Yeah, exactly. Because you can't, because there's just too much. It's like, oh, you want to give Diamond Dog some time. Okay, but sorry, we need to focus on Swamp Thing for a minute, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the movie's already damn near 2 hours or whatever. So it gets a little disheveled by trying to include so much. But you can't cut out people because it's a fucking airplane. Like, you have to have a full ass airplane of characters.
Yeah. I mean, you can cut out Moskowitz.
Yeah.
But that's about it.
Yeah, I think he got removed cleanly from the script.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Pinball. I like how Pinball went.
I mean, you're never going to make me sad about having a Dave Chappelle corpse doll. That is so fucking funny to me. Every time I see it in that slow falling through the sky, I just lose my shit. It is so funny.
I just love that it's a slightly ashy looking Dave Chappelle.
I always forget he's in this movie. I've watched this movie 5 times in 3 years, and I always forget he's in this movie because I don't want to fucking think about Dave Chappelle.
Fair enough.
So I'm glad he always dies and relatively quickly.
It takes me back to the old school TV shows, the sitcoms that were on when we were, in our late early years, whatever it is. And where they would just ragdoll someone and it would not even look at all like a real person, just a body flies across the screen. It's that is just pillows in a sack, you know?
Yeah. Well, I had friends in they were in college. I was fucking not, because I was a bum for a while. But they were all fucking actors and filmmakers, and they wanted to be the next Whitest Kids sketch comedy troupe. And one of the bits we came up with was, because we had no budget, was hey, you forgot your hat. So we had just a pillow dummy guy. So anytime someone had to take a fall down some stairs or go out a window, it would always be preceded with, hey, you forgot your hat. We'd hand the character hat. and then cut to like the dummy going out a window wearing that hat.
Excellent.
It was the only good idea we had.
Anything else on Con Air?
Phil, are there any themes in this film? I would say no. I would even say like Cameron Poe doesn't even go on a hero's journey. He's not at all a different person at the end of this film.
Right,
like, he doesn't grow or change in this film.
Like, no, he just shows you who you are throughout the course, or shows you who he is. I mean, maybe he shows you who you are. I don't know. Maybe this movie changed somebody, but
it changed fucking Cyrus the Virus into a flat-headed dead guy.
Yeah. It changed Dave Chappelle into a slightly ashy body double.
But yeah, like there's no there. I mean, we're told in the first 3 minutes who this character is, and we are not surprised by anything he does.
No,
exactly. He just lives up to it the whole time.
He should have done more with his Spanish lessons, though.
And his origami.
Yeah.
Origami, too. Big loss. Big fail.
Now, hold on. I did find him using his Spanish. Remember when he meets up with Santino's or Sandino's in the hangar. He says something along the lines of like
hold it essay or whatever.
Yeah. Or like comprende.
Yeah.
Essay or something like that. He uses two Spanish words poorly,
but no origami,
no origami. Unless you want to consider how he folded up Dave Chappelle to drop him.
I think he used the foot method.
Oh, okay.
Also one thing I want to add to in terms of like performance, because it is about Nick Cage, but also I think it should be about like the whole of Nick Cage in the film. And this is very much a
ensemble
film. Like I think almost everyone else is given more to do and succeeds at it in this film.
Or at least was given something more fun to do, you know, back to the original conversation of like being the bad guy is more fun, you know, playing that role is way more fun.
And when you've got 20 bad guys,
right,
there's 20 people having a great time.
Like, you know who is not a good character?
Baby-O.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, I have diabetes. I'm gonna fucking die.
I'm going to try and be a hero, but I'm really hurt and dying from diabetes.
I'm going to show you God does exist.
It's true. Baby-O, they got history. He helped Baby-O get his diabetes.
He helped Baby-O get his diabetes. And with that, Raising Arizona.
Yeah, let's move on.
Yeah.
This is a movie where Nick Cage is a kidnapper. Baby napper, steals babies.
By profession, he is a convenience store robber.
Yeah. Unarmed robber.
In terms of our original bracket, there wasn't like I thought we went into this thinking Nick Cage has done a lot of comedy. He has not. Most of what we have in comedy is our dramas for the most part. A couple of romantic comedies. Or just fucking weird, like kind of.
Yeah, they're kind of dark comedy.
Yeah. Which kind of fits for him. It makes sense that that's the route that he ended up going for comedy.
Yeah, he's definitely got a dark comedy face. Like, it's not a Seinfeld face, but it's definitely a face that when it says something funny, or when something sad happens to it, it's also funny.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah,
I think that's why we get along.
Because I have a sad, funny face. It's the nicest thing you've ever said to me. But I mean, this clearly deserved to be categorized as the best comedy because it's the funniest.
Well, it's funny because it was a number two seed, which I'm trying to look back at what was our number one seed in comedy. Adaptation. Which
we were so much younger then.
All right, so caginess on this one is way easier to diagnose.
Yes, it's a very good amount of caginess. Mm-hmm. The only thing I think that holds back, like really giving it like a top accolades is the fact that it was more of a Cohen decision than Nicolas Cage decisions.
It is a very, like, the character, like, my notes I wrote down that, you know, it is a very monotone, even character for the most part, which works for a Coen Brothers film. Like, this is very much a Coen Brothers character. It's,
yeah,
it's, you know, he is the straight man in this movie for the most part. Like, he has his moments driving by convenience stores that aren't even on the way home. Like, he's got some amazing lines.
I was thinking about the scene when they're trying to take the picture on the couch, and we're fitting a pop here, but honey, it's about to go. Trying to get her attention, get her focused on it. And it's like, you're right. He's pretty like monotone one level, but there's all these things that are sort of like bubbling under the surface that, you know, you see, there's that one scene where he, like, I can't remember what it was, but he just like gnashes his teeth. Like, I don't remember what makes him do that, but
this is something I did want to get into later, but I mean, we can talk about it with all the films. Is these four films specifically really show how great of a physical actor he is. And that's something I don't think people ever talk about. People also don't watch all of his movies in the course of like 8 months.
That's fair.
Yeah.
But like, he's got such a great like physical presence and control in his acting. And like, even when he has a more sedate character, he still brings so much to that character just by how he moves. What I'm saying is Nick Cage is a great actor.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, I think it shows through on this one for sure. It is interesting that he did have the issues with the Coens and didn't like their directing, or not that. It's that they didn't want him to do what he wanted to do, which at that point in his career, like, kind of everyone was just letting him do it. You know, he had been in Peggy Sue, where he got to be the crazy, you know, Muppet voiced.
Well, he was in Peggy Sue, directed by his uncle.
By his uncle, right. He was in Valley Girl, where he was like, you know, the beefcake, but he got to be weird in that, you know.
As a total unknown, that was his first name or first film under the name of Cage.
So, I mean, it's interesting because he'd been given some leeway, or was granted some leeway, because he just forced the hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then to get into a situation where the directors were like, no, we need this from you.
Yeah, well, and that's a pretty big thing from the Coens, sorry, Sean, when that's like their second film.
For sure.
Well, and so, I mean, not just their second. I mean, yes, it is their second film, but the Coen brothers, I mean, that has grown to continue to be kind of their flavor of acting. They seem like such meticulous directors who have a very specific vision, and that's awesome. But when you have an actor who likes to make a lot of decisions like in front of the camera, I could see that being a personality clash.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Nick Cage likes to leave it all on the fucking floor, and I can see that pairing being one where he'd have to restrain himself a lot, which is not something that we've ever heard he likes to do.
Yeah. You know, he just wants to explore the human condition.
Yeah, there you go.
In all of its various facets.
Usually with a very high nasally voice.
Yeah. That, you know what? It's because people with high nasally voices are actually living the best life. So, sorry about it. But yeah, so we've made it. It's a, you know, highly eccentric film. He gives a really great performance of it. A lot of that is definitely due in part to the Coens, but is in no way
detracting
from subtracting from what he provided. So it's just, you know,
I think one of his strengths in this and in most stuff, but like in this, is he does have a very, I guess this just goes back to his physical acting, but he can disappear into a role really well. Like, even when you see that it's Nicolas Cage, like the way he holds his face, the way he moves, like he doesn't, no two movies outside of like the cheap, doing it for tax purposes stuff. Like, he does embody those characters really well, and kind of you can forget you're watching Nick Cage a lot of the time. Whereas like a George Clooney, I'm like, that's George fucking Clooney.
Yeah, when he's passionate about a role, he's on. And
yeah,
this, you know, he gave a great performance, you know, be it directed into this performance or not, like, he nailed it, man. He's consistently the character. He is H.I. McDonough.
It's his best talking work. Accent work, I think we've seen.
It's his best wordy talks. Yeah, outside of Boston Cop in
this is his best, Sorcerer's most consistent Apprentice. Accent. Mm-hmm.
It's his best accent.
In terms of, like, theme, you know, there is some talk about, you know, there's something to be read in here about, nope, my brain is gone. No, I'm falling asleep. Yeah.
That's okay. We also jumped the originality factor, which we didn't talk about with Con Air either, but it's a prison escape film. Yeah. So yeah, we've had those before. They exist.
Action film. It's a 90s action film starring Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
The Raising Arizona does have kind of its own originality. It's not, I mean, it's a heist. It's the, you know, people wanting a baby, all those kinds of things.
A good comedy of errors. It's a heist film. Instead of money, it's a baby.
Yeah.
But then the baby's worth not a large amount of money, even for like the 90s. Time. Like, yeah, I'm like, fucking Nathan Arizona is lowballing that baby.
Well, he's a businessman. He's shrewd.
Yeah, he also has like a store selling unpainted furniture. I don't think he's like as rolling in it as we might hope, but
they have a fountain.
I mean, you want a fountain? I could get you a fountain.
Maybe.
But
it's full of monkeys.
I was looking at this, I was like, well, how many films are out there about people stealing babies? And I was like, film, like, this is me Googling film, couple steals baby. This movie didn't even show up in like the top,
whoa,
like two pages of Google.
What were the top movies?
It's all horror films.
Oh,
so like in term horror and thrillers. And it's like, oh, okay. Well, I mean, The Activity exists in film, but in a comedic sense, it's less prevalent.
What was that Wayne Brothers movie? Was that Little Man? Does that count?
I don't think any Wayans brother movie counts as a comedy.
Fucking Blank Rude. Man is Blank Man is a classic. Is
Blank Man.
I will say, like, I think for the time and for the Coen brothers' career, like, yeah, this is a huge thing. This is a huge movie. This is something people I don't think have really seen before. And I think within the scope of the rest of their work, it does inform pretty much everything going on from here and maybe isn't as original now. But for the time, it's a standout.
It definitely stands out in the world of like comedy and especially in the Coen brothers, not discography, but filmography.
Yeah. Case in point, everything that came after this.
Right.
Yeah. So that is very true. And, you know, moving on, you know, it fucking crushed what it did. Like it was a terrific. That was a weak ass burp.
Yeah,
was that you or was that Taco? Did Taco just die?
That was me. I had a shrimp burrito. That's not coming up great.
Just one shrimp. Not a shrimp's burrito.
I could go for some more shrimp now. Peter, when are we shrimping again?
I got to come down to Portland. Let's shrimp it up.
Oh, we shrimping? We sucking toes?
We shrimping, baby.
Come on, boys.
Yeah, I got into it now. I came around to it.
Nice. You've been hanging out with dancers?
Oh, God.
Get some of them ballet toes.
Sick. Fuck. Oh, I hate
They're
it.
They're tiny. You got a bunch in there.
Well, they're tiny because they're all impacted.
I was thinking about like Sergeant Hatred from the Venture Brothers and how he loves Princess Tiny Feet or whatever.
Yeah.
let's not talk about Sergeant Hatred on this podcast, please.
Yeah, fair enough. He's problematic. So, I mean, at this point, it feels like you guys kind of don't have more to say on this one, unless you really want to put a button on it. But
I mean, if there's a theme in here, it's about like, you know, personal redemption, like High and Ed, you know, get together at kind of their lowest and keep kind of getting lower until, you know, they have to grow up. Like there's an arc here. They go on a journey and they become better people for each other and just as people at the end of this. I mean, even John Goodman and Forsythe, like even at the end of this, like this, having met this baby, decide that they're not ready to be free, that, you know, they still have to like change themselves and return themselves to prison.
Through that same poop hole.
Yeah.
And babies don't fix relationships.
You think any other prisoners got out through the poop hole?
I mean, it seemed like a pretty well-manned poop hole at that point, but...
Yeah. I think there were eyes on that poop hole. I just hate the sliminess of that mud when it's in his mouth and it just looks like...
It's so gross.
Yeah, that's not all poop.
And I love that the first thing they do is just go fucking use a whole can of pomade.
Absolutely. Those guys know how to fuck for sure.
Yeah.
Are we doing this?
Yeah, let's make a choice and let's...
Raising Arizona.
I mean, Raising Arizona definitely has my vote on this one too. Yeah, it's clearly, I think, just a superior film to watch. Now,
it has more to say.
Anybody who wants to watch an action film, watch Con Air.
That one's like, grown on me so much.
Just don't watch anything else.
Any of these final four movies, go watch. Like, we're not absolutely. Like, whatever goes forward from this point on, like all of these movies are fucking great.
Yep, I agree. Raising Arizona. Woo!
Boom. Love it.
We got it. So Pig. Bill.
I fucking love this movie.
I do too, man. Every time I put this on, I'm like,
good movie. I had one of my new friends over last week to watch a Nick Cage film.
Humble brag.
I thought that's right. I have a friend, but my plan was to be
asterisk on that until we see them, but that's fine.
My plan was I'm going to introduce my new friend to Vampire's Kiss. We're going to test this friendship out the gate. And of the four movies, I could suggest the only one he'd seen was Vampire's Kiss.
No. Oh.
And I'm like, all right, we're friends. Let's watch Pig. And we did. And he absolutely loved it.
Yeah. So Pig.
Robin, is about a man who doesn't fuck his pig.
Yeah,
it's true.
He likes iron.
Mm-hmm.
And just one baths. Friend.
Yeah, a nice river bath.
Mm-hmm.
A good quality hobo glove.
Takes me back to high school. D-cell
batteries.
Yep. Were those D's or C's?
Probably C's.
Yeah.
The sweet smell of cassette tape.
When we get back into the conversation here, again, it's just like Con Air. It does not have a cagey performance. If you wanted to stretch it, there's one moment where he yells at a guy and steals his bike.
I would say there is the breakdown at the end. It's silent, but like, again, physical acting, like
I don't think that's
fucking agony there.
I wouldn't argue that that's a cagey moment. I would say that that's an emotional performance moment.
Good acting moment.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay.
Which is separate category of our conversation.
Yeah. But. No, I mean, this is him disappearing into a role. This is him becoming Robin Feld. Like this
for
is,
sure.
Yeah. You know, he describes this as his favorite film. This is one of his best roles.
And Robin Feld just isn't a freak out character.
In my opinion. Yeah.
yeah, as far as like his acting and everything goes, spot on. It's beautiful. I mean, we could just move right into performance. He does a great job. Everything he does terrifically. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of this film where he doesn't do stuff. Like I mean, it's not like Con Air where he's just along for the ride, but he is such a like placid, like driven character that he also just doesn't speak a lot. So it's all on him to like convey that with his body language.
Yeah, the nuance of that is pretty impressive.
Which is great.
I mean, just scenes off the top of my head that are just purely physical is when he goes in with when he goes into the tent with the dumplings, and he just walks in and just like, just, or when he get, you know, when he's writing his name on the cardboard there, and just commanding the room, just like the way he moves in this, just it's everything about it is so powerful.
Yeah, it's a very top performance kind of performance role for him. Just don't expect like monologues to drive that performance. It's just not that film. He's not a loquacious character.
It's a very naturalistic performance and a very naturalistic film. It's like the conversations seem quite real. Like it doesn't play so much as a performance a lot of the time.
I would say some of the conversations feel pretty scripted, especially like his takedowns. But it's not scripted bad. It's just like, oh, you know, clearly somebody wrote this. It's not the hermit from the woods just having these well thought out.
But that's
burns.
Not who he is. That's right, who,
and the
like,
only reason
that's
that those
all...
takedowns work is because he did command something once.
Yes,
you know.
You know, I'm not saying that he isn't a commanding presence, but conversations and stuff like that don't just flow off smoothly, especially when you've been living in the woods for 15 years.
Fair enough.
So it's terrifically written. It's terrifically acted. It's, you know, just also not the slice of reality, but it's a
terrific
representation.
No, but you're saying like there's no monologues, and that's what I'm talking about. Like, there's conversations.
These are different points, but yes.
Do you want to talk about the story, like originality of the story? Was that next?
Yeah.
I mean, we might as well. It's on the docket, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, this is clearly a very personal film to the director and writer. Still amazing. That's the first time, like,
no
feature
shit.
Film director. I absolutely love how much, like, suspense this movie can build, and how much it gets you to care about, like, there's this big mystery about who is he? And ultimately, it's no one we would know about as viewers, but the film does such a great job of building up this legend that Robin Feld, it's like, that means nothing to the viewer, but just the way it's portrayed in this movie and treated, it's like, that's powerful. And that it still feels like a reveal, even if you don't know who that is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Robin Feld's not a real person so far as I can tell. It's, but in the world of the film, yeah, he was a big deal. And, this film, for just like a 90-minute film, does a great job of packing all of that in terms of like originality. Yeah, I mean, higher than normal. Somebody took something from somebody and they want it back. I remember when the trailers for this came out, everybody was like, oh, it's Nicolas Cage, but it's like
John Wick
with but with a pig. Yeah. Clearly classic. It's not that.
Not even sort of.
But it still like has that suspense. I mean, we've watched it enough times now where you know he's not gonna go fucking ham at any point. But my first time watching through, when he's sitting with Amir's dad, I'm like, this could go badly.
Yeah, for a completely I'm saying actionless, but I'm just saying like there are no fights aside from him getting punched up in a basement. Yeah, it doesn't have your more traditional conflict for what we would think when we originally set out to watch this film. But yeah, you know, I think it's a fairly solid story that, you know, we just hadn't explored before. It has elements that are shared, but I mean, fucking everything has elements.
Yeah. It's hard to come up with something that is truly original at this point, but
so, this does a good job of stepping away from all of the previous, like who stole it, give it backs.
Yeah.
In having a Nicolas Cage doesn't throw a fucking punch in the whole film physically.
Right.
So for a protagonist to get through it peaceably, great. I like to see that.
I mean, I think where this movie really succeeds is, I mean, what we're going to talk about next is its theme and its effectiveness of telling that story. Because, you know, fucking pig's a metaphor. It's about, you know, him. Like, I was thinking about while writing my notes for this, I was thinking about one of his last lines in the film when he's with Amir in the diner and he says, like, if I never went looking for her, in my mind, she'd still be there. Could be talking about a pig, could be talking about the life he left in Portland. Like, at the beginning of this film, he cannot listen to the tape of his wife. It's too much. Somewhere in his mind, his wife died, he left. But the place he left, the world he left, in his mind, still lived there. Some part of her was still there. That's gone now. The restaurant's gone. Like the persimmon tree. You know, his home has new people living in it. Like everything he left is gone. And the last connection he has to his wife outside of his memories are gone until at the end, he gets home. He finally puts on that tape. Like, this does, like, such, there's, it's so effective in, like, telling that story and watching that growth and seeing his journey throughout. Also mirrored with Amir's father, who also lost his wife and is trying to hold on to that, but in a much more aggressive way. He's not trying to ignore his hurt. He's not trying to just keep the memory. He's trying to keep her at the loss of everything else in his life. Like, this is such a powerful film, and I just I can't get enough of it. Every time I watch it, I get like more from it.
I don't have much to add to that. I mean, honestly, it's like every time I put this movie on, I have a very good emotional response to it. It's like, it makes me sad, it makes me happy. I feel things when I watch it. It's filmed beautifully, it's directed well, the script is great, performance I think is very solid. There's not a ton to praise or critique on his performance because the character is made to be medium, you know, because he's coasting. So it is fitting what the task was, certainly. But yeah. All right, let's table that one for right now.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about the craziest fucking movie that we have in the bracket.
Yeah. I mean, fucking, if you've seen a Nick Cage meme, you've seen this one.
Fucking for sure.
Yeah.
I described this movie to people the other day. I was trying to describe this movie to people, and they're asking me about the time this came out. Like, it's like, which Nick Cage movie is it? And I just did the fucking Bug Eyes. And they're like, oh.
Like, that one. I know that meme.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if you've seen one meme, you've seen this one.
An iconic performance by Mr. Cage. Definitely the one that, like, defines or epitomizes
caginess.
Caginess. Like,
this is turned to 11.
This is where it was born. Like, there were others before it, but this is its final form.
I mean, this was his testing ground, right? Like, he got to try truly anything because the director was just like, don't know, whatever.
Yeah, it's go for it. Nobody will probably ever watch this, so right. Do your thing, brother.
These were my notes for caginess. Turned up to 11. Really fucking goes for it. Does it work? Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, that moves right into the performance, because he could have done all of that and not earned it with the rest of the film. But my God, like, holding this movie together with all that other like fucking bizarre shit that he does and making it work, like the character, he doesn't lose Peter Lowe.
No.
And I think that's what's just wild to me is like, when he's fucking eating bugs or catching pigeons,
oh. Losing himself in the mirror, you know, all that kind of shit.
Talking about being horny from bats. It's it's like, oh yeah, this tracks.
It is a, like we were talking about with Raising Arizona, Nicolas Cage likes to make choices, and he makes a lot of choices in this film.
This is all choice.
This is all choice. He walks off stage left like a kitty cat.
He crawls off stage left.
Yeah. In that regard, though, it's the only, like, that performance is the only thing that keeps this movie together.
I agree. I think that the movie in general is thin. I think the concept is, like, a little fun and interesting, a little horny. But, like, there's not a ton of meat on that bone, right? No. Like, if you didn't have this performance, this would be, like, the tiniest footnote in history. Like, no one would think about it. No one would care.
Yeah.
Like, Maria Conchita Alonso would be like, yeah, I did this one weird movie one time, you know? What else would anyone say about it? But because it's him at fucking 11, it is something.
I mean, it is the movie.
It is the movie. Yeah,
exactly.
But that means that the movie isn't much.
It is the descent into madness.
Sure.
For a man, it is just an exploration of how, you know, these big business, like, he's not in Wall Street, but in that sort like of like giant white collar culture, especially
middle
for
middle management. Yeah,
just can beat a person down and drive them to lengths that they never would have expected.
And rabies.
Yeah. Theoretically, if he even ever got bit by the bat.
You fucked that bat.
Yeah.
Oh, well, and here's my thing going to like, this only works because of Nick Cage's performances. Everybody we've talked about this movie has had a completely different read on what the story was or wasn't. Like, it is not structured well. It is not told well. And if it weren't for this performance, like, no other performance in this movie stands out as particularly good.
They exist like at about the same level as Nicolas Cage's performance if you stripped away the insanity.
True.
Like, exactly. If it was Nicolas Cage playing Peter Lowe with the same affectations but straight,
yeah, just deadpan,
that's about what you get everybody from everybody else. Yeah. But that's really not the point at hand. I mean, it is important, but from Nicolas Cage's performance,
great performance.
It's fucking nines, man.
Yeah.
So he crushes it. And, you know, like you said, he makes the movie.
Yeah.
He makes an entire film that has existed for 35 years ish.
All movies have existed for an amount of time.
It is culturally relevant 35 years later.
I don't know if that's true.
You literally reference the meme every time we talk about it. That's cultural reference or relevance.
Not in terms of like fucking a cinema, not in terms of a cinema. Meme culture in like high art, I would not put in the same, necessarily equate to the same thing.
Well, that's the problem. We have to talk about movies like Pig versus Vampire's Kiss in this. So we have to break them down to the base.
This is the weirdest one. I mean, it's the hardest challenge because they are very dissimilar movies, you know?
Yeah.
It's like in Pig, he is put into a movie that is very good. Mm-hmm. Structurally, it's sound. Script is sound. Music is beautiful. Like, everything is really well done. And he's also very good. And in Vampire's Kiss, he's in basically a bad movie that should be schlock and, like, chucked in a bin somewhere. But he made it into something that isn't that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, I would also say, yes, Robin is not a crazy caricature.
No.
But that is an amazing role. And I don't know that necessarily anyone does it better than Nick Cage. Like, I still say Nick Cage makes that movie as well.
Well, we're going to pig two with Rob Lowe.
Oh, okay. So we've had Rob Highs and now Rob Lowe's.
Fuck.
So the originality of Vampire's Kiss, it's a movie about a guy going insane.
Yeah.
And just kind of losing his grasp on reality.
My kind read on the theme is, middle management, like, not going anywhere, like, but because he is, his ego can't allow him to just be middle management. So when he starts to lose it, he goes down that rabbit hole of, like, well, clearly he has to be special. Clearly there's something important about him. And that would normally manifest in, like, a massive ego, or like an American Psycho type situation. But for him, it's vampirism.
But it's also important to think about, like, because you did bring it up, like, Patrick Bateman could run because Nick Cage walked this one, you know, or, like, started that sprint. Like, American Psycho wouldn't exist in the way it does if not for something like this.
No, it's pretty clearly informed the performance of Christian Bale. In themes, you know, I'll go with you there. It's definitely themes of excess, of abuse, the loss of touch with yourself in an attempt to live up to an ideal of others, and also just, like, wanting more, greed, gluttony.
Yeah.
So, and
America.
America. Yeah, absolutely. Like, this is capitalism, and it's feeding off of the people that are supposedly building it up too. So,
yeah.
I mean, this is the hardest one. This is the biggest challenge for us, right?
I mean, I don't think it's I think it's a fun movie. I'm glad I've watched it. I'm glad I've watched it a few times. I will watch it again. But it's not a good movie. It is.
I'll ask you a question real quick before you finish this thought. Which movie did you want to show your new friend out of all four movies when you first got them back to your place? It was Vampire's Kiss. You told us in the story.
You done got 10
minutes ago.
I mean, no, I know. I mean,
like,
yes, I did.
You chose that over all of them.
Not because it's the best movie, because it's the weirdest movie.
Well, part of this experiment is also not his best film, because we left Academy Award winning Nicolas Cage back, like, two rounds ago.
Yeah, but I mean, again, Robin Feld is an astounding character, and Nick Cage does a great job with it. Again, it's the wackiness of Vampire's Kiss is what makes it. I don't think it's the better film, and I don't necessarily think it's the better performance. It's the crazier performance, but I don't think it's the better performance.
I'm going to take the opposite stance. I think Vampire's Kiss is the most informative of Nicolas Cage as a pop culture icon, and as Vampire's Kiss was a springboard for his career. I found the word. It was springboard.
Oh, yeah. Not diving board.
Yeah. Not a diving board of anxiety and hatred, but a springboard for his career. And, it, you know, of the films, I will throw in Vampire's Kiss in any mood. It's a film that I could present to somebody at any time. If I'm talking about, like, not even just between the two films, if I have to sit down with somebody to watch a Nicolas Cage film, it might be Con Air or Vampire's Kiss. Now, I'll concede that Con Air is not going forward.
This is where it comes down for me, is I can't recommend Vampire's Kiss to just anyone.
Mm.
Like, they're like, I like I would. Did John do Vampire's Kiss? Did he watch The Sever?
I think that John has watched Vampire's Kiss, but no, we had Lauren Freeman on.
One person.
I can't remember. And I'm just using John as an example because John has always maintained he refuses to like indulge anything that is bad. But like, I know a lot of people who just wouldn't be interested in this movie for a lot of reasons and would never give it the chance it deserves. Like, this is a harder movie for me to recommend in most situations.
Well, no, this isn't a bad movie, though.
It is a bad movie.
No, that's the problem. It's not a bad movie. And when we talk about it like it's a bad movie, it's just because we don't like some of the surrounding elements of it. But when you look at the movie as a whole, it is, in my opinion, a very important piece of Nicolas Cage's filmography. And it's important for people to see it because it does reflect like what he was building up to before that. And it created so much more of his career.
It doesn't reflect anything, though. It's a vampire.
Fair, but that only matters if someone cares about that arc of his career and not just the a standalone film.
Yeah, I don't know.
This is going to be a Peter decision.
I don't actually know that I am going to take that role. This is a really tough one because my feeling is that my favorite movie from this entire experience is Pig. So to have it lose feels wrong. Do I think that Nick has really valid arguments for Vampire's Kiss? Yes. I watched it again the other night and it was fucking amazing. I still really love that movie. We're at a bit of an impasse because I don't want to just be like, I pick, you know. I can tell you that I also did a poll from past guests who have seen both of these movies and Pig beat out Vampire's Kiss. Does that make a difference? I don't know. Like, I could be swayed either way on these movies. It's really, really complicated and really challenging. I think that the themes around sexual assault and things like that in Vampire's Kiss make it not as approachable as something like Pig, which is basically just, it's sad if you've lost somebody, which everyone kind of has. So I think Vampire's Kiss is without doubt one of his most unhinged, wild, over the top, human, crazy, bananas, whatever fucking performance that has ever existed. He's never done it again. He's never had the no boundaries, you know, opportunities to do it, which makes it worth seeing no matter what. Like, you have to watch it, and the stuff that's hard in it, just
it's a theme that you just have to accept in vampire films.
Fair enough. And you know, you think about American Psycho, like there's a lot of sexual assault in American Psycho too, and that's regarded as, you know, a piece of cinema masterpiece or whatever, which I disagree with, but you know, that's not the point. Candidly, will either of you concede one or the other?
I'll give it to Pig. Pig's a phenomenal film, so it's fine.
I don't disagree with anything Nick says. I think the better...
We have that recorded. Just
loop it.
Yeah, we're going to cut out all of this, and we're just going to be like, I like Vampire's Kiss. I agree with everything Nick says.
I just think everything about Pig is just so much better.
Okay. I like the run-up of Raising Arizona and Pig. I think it'll be a great selection, you know.
What if we just splice Vampire's Kiss into Pig in the middle?
Oh, we just fight we just club r- it.
We yeah,
just
run long,
shoot scenes. Oh, yeah, every two frames every once in a while. No, I mean, like, we've got a great lineup here, and you know, Vampire's Kiss made it all the way.
Despite
and that's terrific.
Everything, despite right. the Mandy's of it all, despite fucking just wild yeah. at heart, like it's so amazing. This movie, right. the movie
to be
is
the weirdest
astounding.
Of the weird is terrific from a yeah. Nicolas Cage standpoint. I love it.
Yeah,
this so. Movie is fucking astounding. It is a great film, and I do recommend it.
Yeah, you know, I'm gonna go back and I'm gonna say, that guy on the airplane who caught me watching it said it's one of his favorite films too. So
it is great. Like,
good on you, airplane guy, yeah, who airplane watched guy. The movie over my shoulder without sound. You
know, if we didn't have to make a decision, I wouldn't want to throw any of them away.
To be fair, like, nothing's getting thrown away. It all still exists, and you can come to my house and watch it.
Now, you could also, for the doubleheader, instead, we can run everything at 2x speed, which is how I've watched most of these movies throughout this experience.
Gross, you're not even allowed to coordinate this now.
All right, well, I've been fired for this. Enjoy editing the episode, you fuckers.
Fuck. Well, that was a nice podcast we had there, Nick.
Run who the Patreon people are.
Bill.
Oh, good. Bill. You got one.
Nathan?
Yeah, you got Nathan. Good. Nice. We are in one of their houses right now. So,
John.
Yeah. No. You're not supposed to let them know. It's supposed to be a mystery. Like that time we recorded in Hayden's room.
Oh,
we've
yeah.
talked about that ad nauseum.
I don't know that Hayden's ever
heard
that.
He's never questioned it.
No, he no. hasn't.
Which proves Hayden doesn't listen.
Did the story of him not wiping ever make it onto the podcast?
Yes.
I'm almost positive it did. If not, yeah. I definitely have the raw audio of that.
After he helped you move and he went to poop and he was like, that's from Nick. And you're like, I didn't bring toilet paper down yet. And he's like, quiet.
Shit.
So, that's how that went down.
Yeah, yep. You know. You splash enough water on it and you're fine. That's why we wash hands, right?
You okay there, Peter?
I think I might have pneumonia right now. So.
Oh, that's so good. I'm glad I'm here with you.
You can't get pneumonia from me.
Yeah.
Well, you don't know how
you
I
got
kiss.
Tongue kiss.
Yeah, when it gets deep, you can get there.
I'm all the way down there. I'm gonna
now
heal
I'm just
you.
Thinking about that fucking gif of the cherries on the tongue.
Oh, I love that gif.
It's your favorite, I know. But yeah, shit. So that's gonna be a cool doubleheader. We have to figure out what our sequencing is gonna be, but I think that's gonna be enjoyable for everybody. If you are interested in coming to that show, there are still tickets available. So reach out to me. But yeah, thank you all for listening. You have made it this far, and if this is your first episode, you're dumb.
And this if it's your 84th episode, you're also kind of dumb.
Kinda dumb,
like,
but, we love you more. I don't know.
This
we
is the only episode
everybody.
I'm going to suggest to people because it's the only one where we sound intelligent.
Debatable. Yeah, you can find us on social media, cage_match_pod, or on Patreon. If you want to support us at the end, the brain death of our podcast, why not? You can find us at cagematchpod or cagematch.
Yeah.
And special thanks to our Sparkle buddies, Josh, Sean, Josie, Rico, Matt, Adam, and Bill. And to our cage dancers, Ira, Sean, Freeman, Lance, Nathan, and Cameron. You fucked me up. You gave me an extra Bill.
I like how Nick didn't name drop Josie when we were trying to come up with like fucking patrons.
Yeah, I know. Like one of our earliest patrons.
What? We always say Bill's name like 1,000 times.
We do say a lot of Bill.
Bill.
Oh,
Bill.
I do have some This Week in Cage news.
You hit us.
Well, it's Spider-Verse news, but he's going to be in the next Spider-Verse. We got a release date.
Oh, good.
2027.
Nice. That's a year.
Yeah, that'll feel...
2 years.
That'll feel not that far away at some point.
June 2027.
I'm like 83% sure I can live that long. That's pretty good.
That's pretty
odds.
Good. Pretty good.
I don't know. Fucking every day I watch the news, that number goes down a little bit.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah. I mean, you could still be alive, but you'll probably be in a different country at that point.
And not because I want to be there, because they sent me there.
Yeah.
God. I'm trying to stay the fuck out of the sun. I'm not trying to Yeah. I'm trying to be a daywalker as much as possible these days.
Get that really, really fucking thick sunscreen that I had.
Oh, yeah. That baby block.
White face.
Yeah.
The dresses aren't helping, I will say.
At least you're in Portland.
Yeah.
Go around with blood on your face.
Or salsa.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Salsa face. It's been a long day.
No shit. Get some sleep.
You're fucking telling me.
All right, let's turn this shit off.
I love you guys.
Bye. Bye.
It says 6'2", so, you know.
Damn, he's a fucking big dude.
Yeah.
Because he's kind of like a brick shithouse, too. I mean, in like a fat, pudgy way, but...
Yeah, he's broad.
Yeah. Yeah, like he seems like he would take up a lot of space in an elevator.
Yeah, you don't want him in the middle seat of the airplane.
No.
Mainly because you're sitting next to John Travolta.
Fuck you, John Travolta.
Well, who knows? Gunslinger might be complete ass. So
almost certainly that movie's going to be complete ass, and Surfer will probably be not bad.
Yeah.
Or at least weird enough that it's like.
Yeah, I have high hopes for Surfer.
I want Nick Cage to be I don't know why he really wants to be in Westerns now, but
because Westerns are cool. And it's a
I agree.
It's a great action piece for an older man.
It's true.
So
you don't have to be like athletic or good at anything.
But
you
this is gonna be like, the his third draw. Western, and this one looks to be the worst.
I have to go rewatch the trailer. I can't imagine that it could be worse than the old way. That movie was such dog shit, except for Eustace.
Yeah, Clint Howard.
Fuck yeah. and then fucking balls. What was the other one? Fucking the one that like didn't have any, barely had any dialogue. Just Nick Cage staring like off into the middle distance.
The Buffalo one?
Oh yeah.
Bison Boys.
Yeah, Bison Boys.
Wow. Butcher's Crossing.
Yeah, Butcher's Crossing.
We got there.